exciting section of the Amrita, in which you'll get to hear Prabhupada taking apart so-called civilization today. And this section we're going to read contains very important transcendental sociology. Prabhupada giving sociological directions for the Krishna consciousness movement into the future. So the scene is a train ride in India, and Srila Prabhupada is riding to Allahabad with some of his disciples. And they are going to engage in a mock debate, in which the disciples are going to present to Srila Prabhupada all some usual argument against Krishna consciousness. So once again, we want to stress that Krishna consciousness is not dogma. It is not some kind of dry, sterile set of religious beliefs. It's a very active, dynamic philosophy, which is based on inquiry. You'll see that word in so many places in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, inquiry. A disciple is supposed to ask intelligent questions. It is not that when you become a devotee, you become like a stone and you turn your brain off. Actually, we don't know what real intelligence is until, in association with Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, we understand what our brains are meant for and how to actually ask a proper question. So, in this dialogue that we're about to read, you'll see how stimulating and how energetic and enlivening the process of transcendental discussion is. If we're not feeling enlivened to ask questions about Krishna and devotional service, then that shows our enthusiasm is suffering, and we're being overpowered by seeing everything in Krishna consciousness as mundane and ordinary. So we'll begin. Srila Prabhupada wanted to travel with a group of his disciples by train to Allahabad. But when a devotee went to buy tickets, he discovered that all seats had long been purchased. There was no chance of making reservations for Allahabad, so close to Kumbh Mela, at the biggest festival in India, where millions of people go to bathe in the confluence of the Ganges and the Yamuna. One of Srila Prabhupada's Bombay friends, however, a Mr. Gupta, held a high position with the Central Railway of India, and at Prabhupada's request, arranged for a special private car on a train to Allahabad, exclusively for Prabhupada and his disciples. And many times that's the only way you get things done in India. You have to know somebody just to get a seat on the railway. And that is also the job of the spiritual master, to recommend the disciple to Krishna. You should never think, oh, on my own, I am so great, I am so intelligent, I am so qualified. No. A devotee always presents himself, herself, as the humble servant of the spiritual master. And then the spiritual master recommends you to his spiritual master, and then the recommendations go on until they reach Krishna. So we all need some personal recommendation. Krishna is personal, and he wants the recommendation of his dear devotees. And then he takes more notice of you. So the process of devotional service is how to become recognized by Krishna by becoming recognized by Krishna's devotees. Early on the morning of January 11th, Srila Prabhupada embarked on the 24-hour-plus train ride from Bombay to Allahabad. He was sharing his first-class compartment with Murmeshwara Swami, Jagadisha, and Hari Sari. And even as the train pulled out of the station, Prabhupada was preaching. Rameshwar mentioned a radio show he had recently been on in California, where a Lutheran minister had said Krishna was a sex symbol because he had so many wives and gopis. This is Prabhupada speaking. Even taking it that Krishna is after sex, said Prabhupada, then if sex is bad, why are they after sex? Rameshwar replied, he says that sex is not for God. Srila Prabhupada was sitting on one side of the compartment, and his disciples sat facing him. The loud rattling of the train cars on the rails made conversation sometimes difficult. Prabhupada said, if sex is not there in God, then how has it come? God created everything. So God did not create sex? Srila Prabhupada explained that sex exists both in the material world and in the spiritual. Material sex enjoyment being a perversion of the original pure sex that exists in the Supreme. Krishna's sexual enjoyment, therefore, is not at all like material sex. It is the exact opposite. In fact, inasmuch as the reality is the opposite of its reflection. So you know in Bhagavad Gita, beginning of the 15th chapter, that Krishna explains the example of the banyan tree, that there is a tree on the bank of the river, and that tree becomes reflected onto the river, upside down. So in this way, the material world is the upside down reflection of the spiritual world. So what is the highest thing in the spiritual world becomes the lowest thing in the material world. And this is the problem with our sexual pursuits. You have some tiny idea, of course, sex in the spiritual world is beyond our total conception and calculation, but we have some tiny idea. And we try to pursue that tiny idea in the material world, thinking that we are the enjoyer. That's the cause of the whole problem. Actually, we have some tiny idea of something that is so exalted and so pure, simply involving spiritual energy, spiritual bodies. In the spiritual world, there's no matter. But here we are in the material world trying to imitate Krishna. Therefore, because we have this false desire to imitate Krishna as the enjoyer, we've been handed over to the reflection. And in the reflection, the top has become the bottom. Sometimes you hear about Krishna and the gopis. That has nothing to do with matter. That has nothing to do with physiology. That has nothing to do with lust. The affairs of the spiritual world are pure spirit. Everything in the spiritual world is composed of Satchitananda, eternity, full knowledge, and pure bliss. There's no matter. There are no inconveniences. There are no impediments, no problems. Just the pure flow of spiritual variety in perfect harmony with Krishna. Of course, sex life in the material world involves physiology. It's simply the exchange of secretions and emotions. And people call that love. Yes, I agree to hand over my secretions and emotions to you. You'll give yours to me. Now, that is love. People actually have no idea of why man and woman should be together. They have no idea why there should be families. Therefore, they don't even want to have families anymore. The actual purpose of family is, all right, you have some desire, then you license that desire. Prabhupada would always give that example. Just like liquor is licensed, although everybody forgets the reason why liquor is licensed, because it's disruptive. Places must have a license to sell liquor. People must be over a certain age. It's control. Actually, of course, the reason why the state is controlling liquor is not so much because they think it's bad, it's because they want to make money off of it by taxes. But the original understanding is that things that can get out of hand should be controlled, licensed. So in real family life, sex life is licensed. Family life is no invitation for unrestricted sex life. The whole of real human civilization is militating against unrestricted sex life. So in real human culture, you have some desire, then you work it out in the bona fide way, and you accept the reaction. Why is it that only human beings of all the species of life have such a difficulty understanding that male-female interaction is meant for procreation? Only the human beings have succeeded in divorcing sex from its natural purpose and trying to squeeze out some perverted pleasure. Take it out of its natural context and just, like you take a dry towel and try to squeeze water out of it. And that is supposed to be love. No. The Vedic culture does not accept this. And this is a big problem for Westerners to understand. In Vedic culture, human culture, in 3 out of 4 ashrams, there's no sex. Whether one is single, or one is in the vanaprastha retired family stage, or one is in the renounced stage. Only in 1 out of 4. And in that 1 out of 4, it is restricted. At certain times, for the purpose of bringing into the world highly advanced souls. So, because we're trapped in the perverted reflection, we have elevated to the highest something that is actually not meant to be in that situation. And all our aspirations are focused by society onto that thing which has been put on an altar as the highest, the cause of all causes, the solving of all problems. And this way we have been brainwashed. And Krishna consciousness involves getting inside that brain and cleaning it. So these Krishna conscious temples exist for, they're like brain laundries. Get all the gook, all the misconceptions out of the brain. But we're so foolish, we take it as normal. Oh, when you're living according to materialistic principles, you feel happy when you feel lust. Oh, I'm feeling lusty. Yes. Now I know I'm all right. And of course, old people, if they can still feel lust, then they are really proud. And recently in the newspapers, they were all celebrating that some lady, 65 or 70 years old, had given birth. Just see. And one of the most famous scientists in the world, Stephen Hawking, maybe some of you have heard of him, written a book, A Brief History of Time, which has sold millions and millions of copies all over the world. And he's just pure speculation, but he's worshipped as one of the greatest brains of the 20th century. Now, Stephen Hawking, he has a disease in which he cannot move a muscle in his body. He's been in a wheelchair. Now, a muscle in his body can move so much so that he can't even talk. He has to have some technological high-tech hookup between his voice and some computer. He can't even move his throat muscles to talk. And not a muscle in his body works. And so he was married, and his wife was taking care of him for 20 years. You can imagine how difficult it is to take care of such a person. But then he had a nurse also, and he had an affair with the nurse. And he said, I was determined to show that even though I can't move a muscle in my body, still I can do anything I want. So he was very proud that somehow or other he was able to have an illicit affair. And then he ditched his wife, who had been taking care of him for 20 years, total wheelchair basket case. He ditched her and married his nurse. And so this is being glorified in the newspapers that, yes, just see how determined he is. And they showed a picture of him with his nurse, you know, and he's just totally shriveled up and skinny in a wheelchair, and he's, you know, trying to look all romantic on his wedding day. So people glorified it. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, we condemn it. It is a total misuse of human life. So not only do people understand the purpose of material sex, they don't understand, of course, Krishna's affairs, which have nothing to do with matter and physiology. So therefore they're accusing, as Prabhupada's pointing out, Krishna, very lusty, because he had so many wives and the gopis. But sometimes Prabhupada would say, if you're going to criticize Krishna for being lusty, then you must say he's unlimitedly lusty. Because there's no limits to whatever Krishna does. He is unlimitedly lusty, and he's capable of having unlimited wives, unlimited girlfriends. So what are you going to do about it? Don't just say he's lusty if you're going to criticize. You must say he's unlimitedly lusty. Do you have any conception of that? You get lusty for some time and make some affair, and then you get frustrated after it. And you throw the person out. Krishna's no limit and no impediment. No problem for Krishna. Everything is his energy. So you cannot say that Krishna is after others' wives or Krishna is after something that's not him. Everything is Krishna's energy, just like the rays of the sunshine. They are the sun. And Krishna doesn't dally with matter. All Krishna's associates have purely spiritual forms. Krishna has purely spiritual forms. And as Prabhupada would always point out, in Dwarka, Krishna had 16,108 wives. It's not that each wife had to wait 16,108 days to be with Krishna. No, each wife had her own Krishna in her own palace. And Narada Muni, when he went around Dwarka touring, he would see each Krishna doing something different in each palace. It's not that each wife had like a television projection of Krishna all doing the same thing. No, each wife had her own individual Krishna. They're all expansions of Krishna. All with individuality, even though they're all Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, you cannot compete with that. Yet, when you come to this material world, we have a desire to imitate Krishna. How crazy. And devotional service means how to be the servant of Krishna. The quicker we get this idea out of our head, that I am the enjoyer, the more sane our life becomes. And that is why devotees have problems, or people who want to be devotees, have problems with temple life. Because it totally goes against being the enjoyer. And totally pushes in front of you all the time that you are the servant. I was talking yesterday at Newtown with one young man who tried to spend a few days here. He spent 3 days here. And I was trying to help him focus on what was the real problem, why he felt he couldn't stay here. I mean, he's single, he's chanting 16 rounds, he's following the principles, but what was at the root of why he couldn't stay here? And together we got him to see that the real thing was he felt a bit freaked out that he was not the enjoyer, that everything went on in a way that was for Krishna's pleasure, and it's like his desires to enjoy were just thrown aside. And that was like just too heavy for him. So I said, well, what are you doing now that's so successful as an enjoyer? Oh, nothing. So you're doing nothing, yet you cannot take up activity to give pleasure to Krishna. Of course, he's chanting 15 rounds and following the regular principles. Hopefully, perhaps, maybe in the BDU program or something, you can, you know, try to bring him along. In any case, that is a great problem. That is why sometimes when we're in Maya and our consciousness is a bit foggy, I don't know, I can stay here, and I'm getting a little too heavy here, and I just don't feel loved. I just don't feel appreciated. When you start feeling like that, you should know that it's because you want to be the enjoyer, and there's nothing being that's not being recognized. There's no fuel being given to that fire of enjoyment. And that's good. That's purifying. Krishna, however, he is the enjoyer. He has the qualifications to be the enjoyer. We have to look at ourselves. Do I have the qualifications to be an enjoyer? I'm tiny, insignificant. I have a temporary body that's rotting on me. Everything is out of my control, except my choice to choose Krishna or not. Just look at your life and see how you've tried to be the enjoyer, and understand how it will fail, how it already failed. And even if you're foolish enough to think, well, I was kind of successful, it'll end at any moment, and you don't know when. And what kind of enjoyment is that? What kind of enjoyer are you? Clutching at matter and trying to squeeze out some nectar. And calling that excitement. Growing old in the process. And the body being subject to so many diseases. When I was in a bookstore in Auckland, looking for some nature books, because I'm thinking of writing a book showing various nature examples used in the Bhagavatam. Just like we were saying, the sun and the sunshine. The Bhagavatam has so many of the things like that. Prabhupada did something like that in light of the Bhagavat. So, they had one, among the nature books, they had one book about sharks. And on the cover they had a sticker, warning, pictures can be very disturbing. I wonder, well, what is this, you know? I mean, if there's some kind of course, they don't even call it pornography anymore. If there's some kind of lust book with all sorts of lewd pictures, you never see such a warning on the cover. So why do they have it on a shark book? So I said, well, let's check this out. So, yes, in the centerfold, they had pictures of people who had been attacked by sharks. And it actually was very educational. You could see their bodies, just where the shark had just ripped apart their bodies in such a horrible, gruesome way. But it was actually the truth of material existence. You could see the real secrets of the body. One 15-year-old girl was surfing, and she decided, you know, she found the calm part of the water and decided to go to sleep on her surfboard. And a few minutes later, you know, a shark attacked her, dragged her under, and they showed it. Her leg just looked like when a meteor is eating a big turkey or chicken, you know, with what they call the drumstick, and just so her leg just looked like that. And they showed her on the operating table, and the nurses, they had the masks on, you know, they had to cut her leg off, but you could see they were looking totally freaked out, like, just such a nice girl, so pretty, and just look, her whole leg was just, looked like a huge creature taking a bite out of it. It wasn't even a clean bite. You know, shark's teeth are very jagged. It was just, I said, yes, this is the truth of the body. So I was telling myself, come on, now feel attracted. Here it is. Here's the body. Look at that. Look at his body with a huge rip in it. Are you attracted? Why not? So, our attempts at illusion are so ridiculous, but we persist. We want to carry on. It's amazing. Yet Krishna has no problem with his affairs because he doesn't deal with matter. There's no matter for Krishna. What appears to be matter for you is spirit for Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does say, I have two energies, the spiritual energy and the material energy. But that division is for you. For Krishna, it's all his. Therefore, when Krishna comes to this world, there's no problem for him. There's no matter for him. The matter is for you, because you're seeing things separate from Krishna. Matter means ignorance. It presents itself to you as having nothing to do with Krishna. So we'll go on reading. You do not understand how to face the opposing party, said Srila Prabhupada. He was in an animated, argumentative mood, enthusiastic to show his disciples how to defeat the opposition. He had sometimes described his own spiritual master as Sinha, Lion Guru, and they now saw him in a similar fighting spirit. The more opposition there will be, he said, the more we have to defend. Srila Prabhupada, Ramesh Roy asked, should we be thinking in our minds that one day the Krishna consciousness movement will have to manage the cities and the nations of the world? Oh, yes, Prabhupada replied. This is what devotees really find exciting. Prabhupada's huge vision. He was not a small timer. That's why I like the programs that you have here in the city temple, because they're not small-time programs. They're ambitious. They have scope. They have a vision for the future. And that was Prabhupada's his hallmark, that he was not just some kind of secluded religionist, isolated meditator. He, though, was absorbed in the highest spiritual realities. He, at the same time, had a program how to spiritualize human society at its lowest level, and it's definitely low now. So, he's telling the devotee, yes, you should think that one day the Krishna conscious movement will manage the cities and nations of the world. I remember in the USA, Prabhupada was telling devotees that, I have a dream to one day take over your country and make it Krishna conscious. That is why I keep going on it in this old age. So, to be motivated by these big visions, that is bona fide for a devotee in Prabhupada's mission. And to get a chance to participate in a big vision, oh, that is so wonderful. Just like here, you're all laboring so hard to make the Sydney Temple a beacon for the area. And you're laboring so hard how to make unlimited book distribution, how to make a center where people can come and be attracted to Krishna, be attracted to Prabhupada's books. This is very wonderful. This is worthy of sacrificing our life for. And we can be sure that if we don't sacrifice for Krishna, you know what you're going to sacrifice it for. You know where your energies are going to go. It'll look very attractive and it'll come out so frustrating. And then you die. So, Rameshwar asks how the devotees could accomplish such a huge, ambitious project. The management would be simplified, Prabhupada explained, since the citizens would live a pure, natural life. Thus, the burdensome, sinful aspects of godless government would become unnecessary, and so many complex problems would be solved. He gave the example of self-sufficient agrarian communities, where men earned their livelihood locally, but only by education and by experiencing the higher taste of Krishna conscious pleasure, he said, could the masses become satisfied with simple living. This is an important point. And this is why the materialists back to the land movement and their self-sufficiency movement are never successful. Because they cannot control their senses. They cannot detach themselves for long from the complexities of material existence because their senses always want some complications. They haven't learned to be satisfied in Krishna. That's another thing. One of the mayors of, he's the mayor of Invercargill in New Zealand. He was a great hippie countercultural leader when he was in college. So, yeah, he was a great leader of the back to the land movement, live self-sufficiently, you know, have no conveniences. But he described that one day there he was in his garden, you know, raising his own food. There I was, you know, my family and I with no clothes in the typical natural way, you know, working in the garden, you know, free from the evils of Maya, from the material world. You know, we were all just, you know, unclothed, working in the garden. It was cold outside. It was cold in the house. I had nowhere to plug music. And he said, finally, I just looked at my wife and said, what are we doing here? They just packed their bags up and moved into the city. And now he's a big politician. And why does he say he's a big politician now? I had to make some money. So this is what happens again and again. If you cannot control your senses, how are you going to agree to live a simple life? So Prabhupada's pointing that out. Only by education and by experiencing the higher taste of Krishna conscious pleasure can the masses become satisfied with simple living. These cities, which we take as so normal, they're just intricate mazes of material desires. That excitement you may feel when you walk down a city street, that's simply due to the mode of passion. You're in contact with the mode of passion. That surge that you may feel or used to feel when you walk in the, you know, on a bustling city street, that is the mode of passion. You're feeling all the material desires just focusing on you, and you're getting stimulated. Yes, I feel comfortable. Feeling comfortable in the mode of passion means there'll be great suffering. But how are people going to be? They must get a spiritual taste, and then they'll stop making complicated arrangements to get material taste. So in no way was Prabhupada simply advocating simple living without Krishna consciousness. He's indicating here he knows it won't work. Rameshwar asked if America would become Krishna conscious by a minority of Krishna conscious persons becoming powerful in government while the masses remain as karmis. No, Prabhupada replied. You can introduce Krishna consciousness in such a way that they will become devotees. Suppose in big, big factories we shall introduce this prasadam distribution and chanting. They will immediately become devotees. Their hearts will be cleansed. Cheto, Darpa, Namarjanam. But will it be like Russia? Pursued Rameshwar. Where there is only a small group of people who are in control? Prabhupada. No, it is not like that. The quality of the people will be changed. So that means only when the whole mass of population becomes Krishna conscious, Rameshwar suggested, then there'll be Krishna conscious government? No, Prabhupada corrected. You can have government when you are in minority, but the mass of people, on account of this quality, They have to see the example. So Prabhupada's saying here that at least the masses of people have to be purified enough to recognize a good thing. Even though they may not all be devotees themselves, at least they should recognize, yes, that is the way to go. They are the best. And then, even if the devotees are still in a minority, still they can influence the whole society because the people are appreciating. Yes, that is the standard. Even though I cannot do it, that is the standard. Those kind of people, they are the ones who should be just making decisions. So this is Prabhupada's vision. Very definite and broad. In one sense, these are not immediate concerns, how the devotees would manage the whole world, since the devotees' political influence was at present insignificant. But by answering these questions, Prabhupada was establishing future goals and tactics for the Krishna conscious movement. Ramesh Swami, as both a practical manager and a visionary, wanted to know exactly how Srila Prabhupada saw the Krishna conscious world of the future. So are there any questions or comments? Very enlivening section. It gives you a call to put your life, and your life means senses, mind and senses, into something that will benefit not only yourself but countless other people. We've tried selfish living. We've tried simply being concerned with our own little worlds, our own little bodies and minds. Now let us try linking to Krishna. Linking to Krishna's desires. That is what bhakti yoga is. And when we chant Hare Krishna in the morning, we are chanting, we are praying, we are begging to Krishna, please link me with your desires. Chanting of our japa is the most important thing to do every day. We are chanting, singing to Krishna, service, service, let me link with your desires. For so long I've tried satisfying my desires. This is not the way the system works. Your desire is my desire. We are learning how to merge into Krishna's desire. Not that we want to become God. We want to merge with the desires of God. Sometimes there is great difficulty understanding the gopis, Krishna's cowherd girlfriends. It seems like they're simply concerned with their own pleasure. That is not true. The gopis simply thought, how can Krishna be satisfied? In fact, they would sometimes pray, if our unhappiness makes Krishna happy, then we don't call it our unhappiness anymore. We call it our happiness. That is the standard of pure devotion. And we get a chance to try and follow in the footsteps of that standard through our service, through our devotional service. How is Krishna being satisfied with my service? Never mind the inconveniences that may be caused me. I am not existing separate from Krishna. Let me sacrifice everything I have for Krishna, because I am Krishna's part. If Krishna is satisfied, I will also be satisfied. So as we were speaking the other night, you all have such great energy, such drive. Australia is famous for that. You're not wimps. So use that for Krishna. Make Krishna famous. Help bring about Prabhupada's dreams. Don't waste your life in selfishness. Giving us a great challenge. If you will take up this challenge, then the challenge of controlling your own senses will be easier, because you'll have something bigger to be involved with rather than your own petty interests, which never work out anyway. All right. All glory to Shri Prabhupada.